Good morning, guys. I hope you're enjoying your summer. So my three daughters, I have three daughters, they're almost all teenagers. The youngest thinks she's a teenager. She's got 6 months to go. But earlier this summer, they went and visited my grandmother, so their great-grandmother. And she is 99 years old. She lives in Canton, Ohio, in the house that she raised her family in, and she lives by herself. So my father lives in Maryland. He goes and visits her quite often. But he really wanted a chance for them to get to spend some time with his mother. They hadn't seen her for about 2 years, so of course they've changed quite a bit. And so he decided he was going to make this possible. He picked them up here in New York, drove them to Ohio, and the plan was that they were going to spend a couple of days staying at my grandmother's house. So he was a little bit nervous about this. We were talking about it for a while, and he said that he was a little concerned how they were going to bridge the generational gap there, like two whole days. Like, what were they going to do together? What were they going to talk about? So he was really nervous about it. But he really thought it was beneficial for my grandmother to not just hear stories about these great-granddaughters that live in New York City, but to actually know them and to see their personalities and ask them questions. And so that was the plan, and it went off well. The trip was a success. The girls said it felt a little bit like they were going back in time because the house doesn't have air conditioning. It doesn't have internet. It doesn't have cable. She just listens to the radio. Their phones didn't even get reception there. So no texting friends. It was like going way back in time for them. Also, my grandma is like many of her generation, where she keeps everything. You know, growing up in the Great Depression, she keeps everything from every margarine container that she uses to every greeting card she ever received. So the house kind of feels like a big antique mall that she lives in. It just has things from six decades, you know, from toys and books and clothes and dishes. And so they just kind of enjoyed going from room to room, seeing all of this different stuff that she has collected over time. They also told me stories about hearing Grandma talk about the new technology. So she, they said it was adorable that she called cell phones self phones, which I think is really cute, right? And it makes sense. And she also talked about watching the flicks, which they realized she was talking about Netflix when she went to visit her daughter. They would watch Netflix, which she called the flicks, which is also adorable. Lily was spending a lot of time on her phone, and she couldn't figure out what she was doing on her phone, and Lily admitted that she was reading a book that she had downloaded on her phone, which was just mind-blowing for my grandmother that you could read a book on your phone, on your self phone. It was just amazing. So, you know, over the course of 2 days, they discussed my grandmother's long life and what she had experienced through that. And then the girls got to share kind of what they're experiencing in their life living here in New York City, talked a lot about our church. And my hope is that they not only learned from each other, but they encouraged each other by sharing the struggles and joys of their very different lives. And I imagine that for you, many of you have memories of spending time with your grandparents, maybe even grandparents as well. But along with the changes that have come in technology and our world economy, it's rare these days that everybody lives, multiple generations live in the same place. We no longer share our lives often with different generations. So this morning, I'm not here to tell you that it's wrong for you to live far away from your grandmother, although I imagine she would appreciate if I did tell you that. But I do believe that something is lost when we don't share life with people from different generations. This summer, we're calling our series Family Reunion because we want to celebrate the fact that this church is a family. It's the family of God. And so when we come together, we want it to feel a little bit like a family reunion, where we celebrate the connections that we share. Now, I've only gone to a few family reunions in my life, my personal families, which I shared a couple weeks ago. And then I've gone to my husband Larry's family reunion, very different reunions. Very different families. But something they had in common was that they both had multiple generations there. You know, the kids are playing and the great grandparents are there, at least for my family. We have lots of older people there, and it's great for all of us to be there together. But what has happened is that doesn't really look like the church these days. It once was true, and there are some churches that have that, where they have multiple generations sharing life together. But really what has happened in the last several decades is that we're becoming more and more, churches are becoming more and more one or two generations at the most. So you'll have a church that's a millennial church. That's where millennials go to. Or that's a baby boomer church where their kids don't really want to go to that church anymore. And so we aren't really sharing life with generations any longer. Now, this isn't necessarily wrong, but there is a danger to it. And there's also a blessing that we miss out on when we don't share our lives with multiple generations. So let's first just talk about the danger that happens. The danger is it's hard to grow faith in younger generations if we don't spend time with younger generations, if they don't feel like they're part of this family. And when we look at the Old Testament, you see over and over again, God is giving instructions to the Israelites' leaders on how they're supposed to share their faith with the younger generation. They tell them how to talk, things that they should wear, even like celebrations, how the kids should participate so that they can teach them how to celebrate the different ways that God has shown up in the past so that they can share and grow their faith with the younger generation. My favorite story of this, there are many, but my favorite story is found in Joshua, in the book of Joshua. And to set kind of the stage for this, you can remember that the Israelites were living as slaves in Egypt, and Moses takes them out of Egypt. And they have the dramatic scene where they're crossing, you know, the Red Sea. God separates the Red Sea for them, and they escape, all of them, through the Red Sea. And then Pharaoh's chasing them, and the water collapses onto Pharaoh's army, and they're able to survive and get out of Egypt. And then they wander the desert for 40 years. And so God is teaching them and leading them all through that and telling them that someday they will make it to the promised land. And over 40 years, you can imagine there's an older generation that had experienced all of that in Egypt, and then this new generation that was born in the desert. And they're traveling around, and they have a different experience. So here they are, they're on the banks of the Jordan River, and I was thinking about this, and I had no idea how far across the Jordan River was. At the time, they say it was about a mile across, and it was pretty deep. At this time, we find out that it was at flood stage. So it's over the head of the kids for sure, and probably the adults as well. And so I was just kind of thinking, like, I don't know how far across it is across the Hudson River, and I would never really put my foot in to see how deep it was, but I was just kind of imagining trying to get thousands of people across the Hudson River and what a challenge it would be to convince people to try to do that, like thousands of people to do that. And that is what Joshua is doing at the time. So he has a plan, and we read about it in Joshua. He says, "See, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you." So the Ark of the Covenant is this wooden box that God gives them instructions on to build. And inside it has the Ten Commandments and some other really important parts of the Israelites' experience. And so it's in the Ark of the Covenant. And so it's going to go into the Jordan River first. And then he says, "Then choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. And as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, sets foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap." So the Ark of the Covenant is going to be led inside. 12 men from each tribe of the sons of Jacob are going to go as well. And then as soon as they enter, the water should stop flowing and pile up in a heap. So if you can imagine, you've just been going around in the desert. Somebody tells you that's the plan. And maybe you have little kids you're going to get through there. And you, can you imagine the fear and really think, is this going to be true? Is this really going to work? And I can just imagine the older generation saying, this is going to work. We've done this before. God has shown up. He separated the water. We're going to cross this land. And so that's exactly what happens. It says when they first put their foot into the water, it piles up in a heap. They're able to cross in dry land. I mean, imagine the time it would take for all of these generations, thousands, to cross over the river together. And so they cross, but the instructions aren't done yet. Joshua says, I want a representative from each of the 12 tribes. I want you to go back as the Ark of the Covenant is still standing there in the middle of this river, and the water has stopped. Go into that bank and get these large rocks. They said they had to kind of lift them up, so not little pebbles, but large rocks, and take them and bring them to the bank here on the Promised Land. And so that's what they do. They go, and there isn't any questions. They just kind of do it. But this is what I want us to focus on today. Why did he give them these instructions? He did it because he says, in the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? You tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. And when it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. Because Joshua knew it was important that this story get passed down to future generations. They had to think about their descendants who wouldn't have experienced this, and that they would have to hear it from the older generations so they could learn how God can show up in a powerful way. Because someday they knew their future descendants would have to go through a new challenge that God would have to bring them through. And that it was important to grow their faith by hearing these stories. So here at Everyday Church, we put a high priority on the next generation. From the classes we provide downstairs, to the financial support of our Pathways mentoring that we're involved in, school supplies we provide for teachers and students in our community, we really realize that we have to be about the future. But honestly, it's a challenge. It's a challenge. We're a small, young church. It's hard to really meet the needs of the next generation well. But I remember when we first started this church, we had a handful of people, and a few of those were my kids, who were young at the time, and my oldest daughter was just starting middle school. And after a while, we kind of collected this little group of other middle schoolers, and I remember that Matt and Kayla Mueller, who are involved in our church now and lead the youth ministry that we have, but at the time, they were a part of the church, pretty young themselves, and they saw a need, and they wanted to provide a ministry for this group of middle schoolers at the time. And so what they did, they collected other adults, got them excited about doing it. They opened their home. They created spaces for these kids to connect with one another. They created spaces where they could discuss about these and allow their faith to grow and tell them about these stories in the Bible and allow them to have questions. And connections did happen. Deep friendships were formed. Faith grew, baptisms happened. If you ask these kids how important this ministry has been in their life, they would share just the blessing it has been to be a part of the youth group. But it occurred to me that that group that I talked about, middle schoolers, are now entering their senior year of high school, a big group of them. And so it's kind of time to look at the new group of middle schoolers. We have this other group of middle schoolers that are around, and we kind of have to look at them and say, what are we gonna do for them so that they have years to be a part of a youth group? I read an article by author and pastor John Ortberg, and it was titled The Gap, and he talked about the challenges of having multi-generational church members and who are not just in the same room, but they're actually having relationships with one another. He talked about the challenge of that. And he had a great quote. He said, it's up to the older generation to figure out how to hand the faith to the younger generation. So he, in this article, he talked about how there's a multi-generational crisis that churches experience if they don't, if they have like one generation or maybe two generations, that they hit this crisis. But he said the crisis takes 30 years to happen. So if you're young, you're like, 30 years, that's so far away, right? But here's what happens, and I mean, I've seen this happen over and over again. A church starts with a group, and then they just age, right? And it's a crisis because the church eventually dies because they don't have the younger generation to come up and to lead. And he said it's a real challenge when it comes to the core of the church is built around, begins to age, the people in the church need to reach a different group from the people it already has. And it's hard to convince that group to do it. So just look at our youth group. We need to start moving towards the middle schoolers and putting our focus on them. How does that feel for a senior in high school? It doesn't sound like a lot of fun, maybe, but it's essential to providing this youth group for these younger kids that they got to experience. And so it's their job as the older generation to provide this for the younger generation. Several years ago, Larry and I attended this new worship service in Ohio that was targeted towards 20-somethings. And we were 20-somethings at the time, and so we were looking for a church. And so we decided we were going to try this worship service out. And so we got there. They had picked, you know, the time and the place and arranged it so that 20-somethings would really want to come to the service. So we got there, and we realized that although we were 20, in our 20s, we were also married. We got married young, and we started having kids kind of young. And so everybody else were like singles, maybe married, but not having kids. And so our kids were kind of the only ones there. They didn't have great programs for them. And then they didn't really want our kids to be around in the worship service either. That kind of ruined the vibe that they were going for. And so that was a little uncomfortable. But for us, the real issue was we were young in our 20s, raising these kids. We had no idea how to do that. Honestly, being married, we weren't experts at that either. We were new to that as well. And we really wanted to have people who were a step ahead of us that we could look to kind of learn from and see how they were dealing with the challenges of raising kids and being married. How we choose to take responsibility for the younger generation in this church, it matters a great deal. John Ortenberg, he finished the article with this. He said, God's plan is not for the church to be a one-generation operation with a 30-year shelf life. So if we want this church to be around for the kids downstairs, 30 years sounds like a long time. But if we want the kids downstairs for Raul and Jameer and Tara and all the kids downstairs and all the kids that we hope to be a part of our church, if we want them to have a church for their adulthood, then we need to make the sacrifices today to make that happen. So that's the danger of not having multi-generational relationships inside the family of God. But there's also a blessing that we miss. There's a unique kind of encouragement that comes with sharing life with believers who are at a different stage of life than you are. One thing that we all share, no matter if you're in elementary school to my great-grandmother's life, is that we all experience struggles and challenges in life. And all of us also have the opportunity to see how God is coming through during those challenges and how he's working in our lives to help us get through the struggles. And so there's a unique kind of encouragement that comes when you hear from another person's experience of how God is working in their lives, especially if it's very different than your own. So we've been focusing on this verse from 1 Timothy during the family reunion service that says, the family of God is the church of the living God. It shows us clearly that church isn't about a service, it's not about a building, it's about the people that are a family. But I want to talk a little bit about the background of where this this verse is coming from. This book is actually a letter that was written by the Apostle Paul to a young man named Timothy. So you know that Paul was a young man himself. At one point, he was kind of an activist, terrorist maybe even, against Christianity. But he has this dramatic conversion on the road to Damascus. And then decades later, he goes around and he's starting churches all over Europe and Asia. And he comes across a young man named Timothy. We read about this in Acts chapter 16, and we learn that Timothy's mother and his grandmother are Jewish, but they become believers in Jesus. But his father is a Greek, so he comes from a very different racial background than Paul. Paul arrives there. We also know that Timothy is a young man, and some people even believe he might have been a teenager at the time. But even being that young, Paul has heard about his reputation. Around the surrounding area of churches, Christians are talking about this young man, Timothy, and how well-respected he is. And so Paul invites Timothy to go along with him, to follow him around as he starts new churches. And so that's what Timothy does. He goes to all these different cities, and sometimes Paul will leave Timothy in charge, and he'll go on to the next city. And then Timothy will leave after a while and join Paul again. And they even are in prison together for a couple of years. They spend time in prison. So you can just imagine how close they would get. But they're very different men and yet have this close bond. So this letter is written by Paul to Timothy 13 to 15 years after they first met. So Timothy isn't as young as he used to be, but he's probably in his 30s at the time. And so he's staying in Ephesus, working at the church there, and Paul is writing a letter to encourage him on how to lead this church. And so there's this great verse of encouragement to Timothy, but it was also a great encouragement to me when I was younger and wanted to serve the Lord. As I was preparing for this, I read that a young man was still considered young until he was in his 40s, which was a little painful for me. But for any of you that are under 40, let this be an encouragement to you. He encouraged Timothy with this. He said, "Don't let anyone look down on you because you're young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in your conduct, in your love, in faith, and in purity." Because Timothy's youth, it didn't disqualify him from teaching those who were older than him. He could encourage those older by just the way he lived, by just the way he dealt with the challenges and struggles of his life. Paul continues in the letter later in 1 Timothy and gives instructions on how the relationships between these different generations should look like in the church, in the family of God. He says, "Correct an older man in the way that shows respect. Make an appeal to him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as if they were your brothers. Treat older women as if they were your mothers. And treat younger women as if they were your sisters." Because ideally, the church is the family of God with multiple generations where we treat each other with the type of respect that God wants us to treat each other in our own families. And where we learn from each other, both from older and younger generations. And when we don't have those relationships, something is lost. I was reading about research that is going on, just talking about the benefits of people having multi-generational relationships in their lives. These are secular research that shows the benefits of it. And I came across this the statement that was very impactful to me. It says, "Research shows children need 4 to 6 involved, caring adults in their lives to fully develop emotionally and socially." Think about that. 4 to 6 caring, involved adults. So think about your childhood. Can you say that you had 4 to 6 in your life? Think about the kids in our community. I mean, I think it might be rare for them to have 2 caring, involved adults, and the struggle that they will always have because they can't fully develop without that emotionally and socially. But there's also a benefits that talked the benefits for older adults who spend time and build relationships with younger generations. It says they experience less depression, less illness. They typically live healthier, happier lives. And so, because of this research, and because the lack of having these relationships in society today, there are a lot of programs that are trying to bring these generations back together again. And so there's all this work that's done in community groups and working to fund these programs to make this happen. And it occurred to me that all this work is happening to make this happen, where generations can be brought together. And the fact that we can do that here, that is happening here naturally, that it's a benefit to not only the older and the younger generations that are here in our church. Our goal here at Everyday Church is to lead people into life-changing relationships. So youth, how you live your life, you have the ability to be an example to those of us who are older than you. You can lead us into life-changing relationships. And for those of us who are older, we have the responsibility to lead the younger people into life-changing relationships, ultimately, life-changing relationships with Jesus. But it takes the whole family to make that possible. And I imagine that some of you might think you're too old, that people who are younger than you don't really want to spend time with you, that they won't receive the benefits, that you don't know how to relate to the younger generation. But I've been surprised that people that feel that way are sometimes surprisingly really important into young people's lives. A few weeks ago, I was downstairs just standing at Everyday Kids welcome table downstairs. And as people were kind of coming inside, and one of many of our three-year-old rambunctious little guys, so we have several little boys that are three downstairs, and there's lots of energy going on. But Jameer is one of those. He came in the door, and he saw a friend, an adult, and screams, "Bruce!" and like tackles him and squeezes him around the legs. And it was adorable. But if you don't know Bruce, he's just an ordinary guy, right? He isn't even his teacher. But he's decided he's going to spend time with Jameer. He loves him. He gives him attention. And Jameer loves him. When our church started many years ago, was really young, maybe the first year, we heard about this young couple, Raymond and Lindy Fullerton, who were in their retirement, decided they were going to move from Texas to New York City and live here and help start this church. So when they got here, they were easily the only people of their generation. Everybody was much younger. But they were all about sharing their lives with people and building relationships no matter what age they were. And they had a great impact on lots of people in this church. But they worked really hard to build relationships with children as well. And my children were some of the recipients of that. I brought something to kind of show you just how these relationships benefit younger kids. So Raymond made this mirror for my oldest daughter, Emma, when she got into LaGuardia High School. She was really excited about it. And I think we found out maybe on a Thursday, and Sunday morning he came to church with this. You can't read it. You can probably see that it isn't, he couldn't sell this probably. It isn't like so fancy that he could go into business making these. But he wrote on it, LaGuardia High School's Rising Star, Emma, Class of 2017. And so it sits in her bedroom. And the other day we were talking about, Emma said, "That's going to college with me and it's going to go with me wherever I live," because it was so sweet. And it really made a difference to her to have it there with her, to look at it and see, my number one fan will always be Raymond Fullerton. Even if, you know, my teacher says, I didn't sing that great, or my friends are doing better, you know, Raymond Fullerton is always my top fan. And he made a difference in many people's lives. Several weeks ago, we had a worship night here on a Friday night where we had churches from all over participate in it. But we also had kids and teens and different ages there as well. And so there was a time where we were just going to break up into groups and pray together. And it kind of happened organically. And I found out later that my two younger kids got in a group with a young couple in our church. And so this couple shared with me much later that they had some time to pray with my daughters, and that my daughters got very vulnerable with them, actually, and just serious about the struggles they were going through, and just sharing that, and that they felt safe doing that with this young couple. They were honored by that, but they were also moved by their own faith and really benefited from sharing that time with them. But these moments are pretty rare in society that we get a chance to do that. And it's even rare in the church today. And so that is why we feel like it's really important that we create spaces for us to have, not just be in the same room together, but actually build relationships with people from different generations, because it benefits us all. We as a church want to make that a priority. And so parents, I encourage you to make it a priority to make sure that your kids get to have these moments, and we're going to make it a priority that we create the spaces to make that possible. This week, the teens came back from CIY. We've talked about it, them preparing for it. They had 10 teenagers that went for a week to a college campus, and they just spent a week really bonding together, but also learning more about God. And so one of the things we did to help them is we tried to partner an adult who's a part of our church with each of those teens, and they were supposed to pray for them throughout the week and then get touch base with them afterwards. And so I know several of those meetings have already happened. Some are going to happen in the future. And the teenagers certainly benefit from sharing that and having a caring adult listen to them and care about them. But I know that the adults are benefiting so much that they walk away encouraged, hearing how God is working in these young people's lives. And so I wanted to share with you one activity I thought it would be good for all of us to do, one activity that Kayla and Matt encouraged the teenagers to do while they were at CIY. We're all going to do it together as well. And so you might want to get your phone out, email something to yourself, text yourself. If you have paper and pen, you can do that as well. But right now, I want you to think of one person who is a step ahead of you, who's in an older generation, who's older than you, who you really respect and you really want to value, to get to know them and spend time with them. So let God maybe bring somebody to mind. For some of you, it might be really easy. For others, you might really need to think about it, pray about it. It's a real value to have somebody a step ahead of you. So the next thing I want you to do is, hopefully this is easy for you, to think of somebody your own age, somebody that you can benefit, that you spend time with, that you value learning what is going on in their lives, and that you really are going to be intentional about spending time with. So somebody your own age, write that down, somebody who's a part of this family of God. And last, I want you to think about somebody who's younger. It can be a child, but it doesn't have to be. Can be a young adult that you're older than, somebody that you can share life with and learn from them, and they can learn from you as well. And I want you to take these names home with you, not only just to pray about them, but also just to think about being intentional about encouraging and learning from these people and building these relationships that cross over generations. And as we close today in prayer, let's pray for this family that we have. A family where we belong to one another, where we love one another, and where we have the opportunity to change each other's lives, no matter what our age or generation.